any other kilos.
F2ID, Ben, no questions or comments.
Good evening, Ben. Welcome aboard. Any other kilos?
KC2ZRG, my name is Rick, just listening. No questions, no comments yet.
Yeah, Rick, thank you for that. And you know what we'll do is I'll go through the roster and point out whose name's whose. Everybody's a little too familiar around here. I try to acknowledge people by name so that people can fill that in. But anyway, welcome aboard. Pretty good, Rick. And we'd like you to make a comment early in the net about your antenna situation and why you changed it, besides the fact you wanted a better signal. So I'm going to put you on the spot at the top of the list for that purpose. So it's an interesting tale you told, something that we've had others tell, but with a different band. So this is interesting. Any other kilos?
KC2, Zulu Mike Alpha, Marco, no questions or comments.
Hi Marco, welcome aboard. Alright, any other kilos? Okay, any station, any call sign, Lake Chickens, etc., please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, whether you have a question, a comment, both, or none of the above. Please call K2BAR.
Questions, no comments.
Okay, let's see. HA4WD, I got you in there. Did you have questions or comments?
No questions, no comments.
Thank you, Rachel. Okay, and who was the other station?
AB2XC, John, no questions, no comments.
Good evening, John. I was kind of wondering where you were. I went for Alpha the first time. You weren't there. You were, Nico. So anyway. All right, very good. Any other Alphas? Any other call signs? I'm sorry.
MS2K, no question at this point.
Good evening, James. MS2K. Very good. Any other stations for the net? Please call K2BAR. Alrighty, well, we got quite a laundry list here. So the first thing I want to do is go to KC2ZRG. He's Rick. And Marco, that means his call sign actually came after yours. We were chatting before the net, and he had something interesting to report, which I thought was kind of fun. So I had a similar experience, but not where he had it. So, Rick, why don't you describe your situation, introduce yourself a little bit. KC2ZRG, W2, TTT, K2BAR.
All right, K2BAR, this is KC2ZRG. Thank you for kind of introducing me. I'm new to the ham radio operations, and I had an initial mobile antenna sitting on top of a rather large gun safe, and I was able to receive a very diminished signal. But I couldn't really make contact with you guys last week, so I decided to upgrade my antenna. And lo and behold, I wanted to make sure I could hit the repeater all the way out in Alpine, and I tried to key in and see if I could get a reception, and I set off the fire alarms in my house. And literally every one of them was just chirping and beeping throughout the whole house just from keying up the mic. So I held off until later on in the morning when I could check and see what was going on, and I lowered the power and everything seemed to be okay.
Okay. So a couple of things. All your fire alarms and smoke detectors are all tied together, I'm sure, but you can confirm that. Number one. Number two, I'm assuming there's a fairly modern installation. Number three, how close was the nearest device to your antenna? How many watts were you running? What kind of radio, blah, blah, blah? What kind of antenna was on said gun safe? And ultimately, what and where did you install the new antenna? What was it, et cetera? So lots of questions. I'll hold you to them all, but if you don't remember them, I'll just hold you to them all with a refresher. Good, Rick.
All right, thank you, Gordon. Yeah, you do have a lot of questions. I'm first, yes, it was a new installation. It's only about 5 years old, the system that's in the house when they redid it. I moved from the top of the firearm safe with a small mobile antenna, just a magnetic mount, which is probably the closest to the fire alarm, might be 8 feet away. I never had a problem even to try and reach you on the 50 watts. I still wasn't having any problems with the alarm. The new antenna, however, went inside the attic. It's mounted up in the highest point of the attic, and it's hanging down, literally hanging off the rafters, suspended about 18 inches off the ground. And I would say about 4 feet away is the closest. To answer a few of the questions there, let me know if you've got any more. I'm trying to keep them all in order here on a little piece of paper, but I'm sure I'm missing something.
Yeah, what kind of radio was it? It's cranking 50 watts.
The Kenwood TMZ71A. That's the radio that, it seems fairly good. I did a little bit of research with Gene and tried to pick up something that I thought I'd be able to use into the future a little bit. I made a little bit of an investment initially.
That's a nice radio. All right, very good. Very nice. Okay, so your new antenna is what's causing the problem with the fire alarms, is that right?
That's correct, the new antenna. It's a Diamond X50.
And it's in the attic, hanging in the attic. That's interesting. So, being in such close proximity to your fire alarm system, that it's tripping it. So what are you doing? How are you getting around this now? Just lowering your power?
Right now I'm lowering the power, but I've spoken with a rep. I've got an owner's manual, and there's a number of things that I'm trying to figure out in the process. There's a feed line that goes in that basically says, if you get a signal, kick on the alarm. So basically I'm going to try and figure out what type of signal is it getting and see if I can in some way limit that being fed through through the receiver. But at this point, lowering the power is pretty much my only only option right now.
I'm just curious, are these the wired KITA CO2 and smoke detectors?
That's the exact ones. They, they're made by Firex, but the KITA actually bought out Firex. They left the name Firex still in operation in the Northeast because it's kind of popular, but it is in fact the KITA fire alarms that are doing this. The guy was very familiar with it when I brought it up. He said, I just don't have an answer for you.
Yeah, well, I have an old, my system is about 5 or 6 years old, and I trip mine with HF. And my solution is that I basically only plug in the CO2 detector on the third floor, which is where the other one has to be, when we run the upstairs furnace, which is, you know, about six nights a month during the winter months. And that's about it. So that's kind of interesting. Alrighty. Well, that's fascinating. Does anybody have any questions for Rick about fire alarms? And by the way, in my case, I was tripping it with HF radio. Anybody have any questions for Rich?
Yeah, this is K2ZO.
Hey, Jim.
Okay. Yeah, having had a little bit of experience with both my own and the commercial units that I used to sell, yeah, it's very easy to get RF into them, and of course the high impedance circuits in there that work with the detectors are easily overloaded with RF. One good way to isolate which is the unit that's giving you grief is to wrap it with aluminum foil. And believe it or not, I solved the problem in my house here with a carbon monoxide detector by covering the back of the unit, where you can't see it, with a piece of aluminum foil, which kept enough RF off of it and stopped the problem. But try shielding one at a time, and then, of course, you may end up having to do lots of other things with little ferrite beads and stuff like that. But that's one way to troubleshoot it. Back to that, K2ZO.
Is it like the usual dozen or so ferrite beads on the leads
where each lead gets their own set of beads. Is that what you did, Jim?
Yeah, that's what I had a situation at one of the refineries where a 100 or so watt base Motorola station was setting off the detectors, and I had the service guy from the company. This is the company that I represented, and the service guy knew nothing. and of course, he was chided quite a bit by the fact that the sales guy knew more than he did, and I was able to fix their problem, so it was kind of interesting. But using aluminum foil to shield things and a little bit of ferrites on it, we were able to stop it, and also rerouting some of the lines, because they, believe it or not, they had the amplifier for the VHF thing was laying on top, the leads coming back from sensors was laying on top of the amplifier.
Oh my, oh my. Alrighty, very good. Well, you gave me some ideas. I'm assuming that depending on what frequency you're playing with, you'll use different kinds of ferrite. We'll go from there. And we're talking about the small snap-on ones, or are we talking about the ones where you have to actually pull the leads apart and actually run the wires over the leads, or through the beads, I should say?
I bought a bunch of the ones that come apart, those two U-shaped pieces from Radio Shack, and used them, and of course stopped the problem. And it was very interesting because it was ham radio that really solved the problem. Other engineers had not a clue, and yet they were very, very knowledgeable guys, but they had not a clue.
So a lot of cases, I know my harness, I think, is a three-wire harness. I think it's three-wire harness, my cable. I can pass the whole thing through one set of beads, right?
No, because most of the problem is common mode.
That's what I'm thinking. Okay, good. And in my case, my 40-meter, 80-meter dipole is right over top of the house. And, well, my shack is on the third floor, so. As is the... as are the some of the detectors. So, I have a smoke detector and a CO2 detector at the top of the stairs here, on the third floor. Pretty good. Anybody else have any suggestions or comments? And I really like the idea, by the way, of the foil on the upper side where you can't see it. I like that too. Anybody else have any suggestions?
Rick, you could just disconnect the detector first and do a test, and then go to the aluminum foil. That might be an option.
Thank you, everybody. I appreciate all these suggestions. I have one question for you. I'm new to the whole lingo of things, and we're talking about a ferrite bead. I'm not familiar with that. I've never really come across it. I do teach, and I teach a little bit of electronics, but I'm not really familiar. What's a ferrite bead? What is that?
Okay. What Jim specifically mentioned was, you'll see them at Radio Shack, they're little clamp-on pieces of ferrite in the plastic housing that holds them together, and basically use a bunch of those on a lead to get rid of RF coming down the lead and into your device. You probably have seen them in Radio Shack, and you probably have seen them and not known what they are. Like video cables have that lump just before you get to the connector, that cylindrical lump. What that is a piece of, or two pieces of ferrite usually smooshed together inside of a plastic casing wrapped around all the wires of the video cable or the power cable or whatever to keep RF out of it. You've probably seen those, but you can actually buy them at Radio Shack and other such places. And there are different kinds of ferrite, but for our purposes, that's probably sufficient to get whatever you can find at Radio Shack.
Thank you. That's, you know what, now that you're mentioning it, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I've used them a dozen times, but I never really thought of what their purpose was in video. I just noticed that they made the signal a little bit more clean. But thank you. This is great to be able to reach out to you guys, because you guys may have given me the answer to this problem that I figured I wasn't even going to be able to figure out. So thank you, everybody.
Well, yeah, Rick, you're like tonight's poster child for why we ask people to check in even if they don't have a question. You know, it's your experience may yield a question that others did not ask, and blah, 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 blah. And to Rachel's point, by unplugging it, you can figure out whether or not it's the device itself or the device when connected to the wiring that's causing the problem. Because, like, for instance, you know, the device has a battery in it, so it'll, even if you unplug it and leave it in place, it still may go off. And that, in fact, that's what triggered me to finally say, screw it, and just, you know, literally unplug it and pop the battery when I'm not running the furnace upstairs. So, because I have a forced air furnace up here for heat on the third floor and the second floor. It's a two-zone system, but there's usually enough convection that, except on extremely cold nights, we don't need the upstairs one to run. So, there you go. Anybody else want to add on?
Kilo Charlie 2, Tango Mike Delta.
Kilo Charlie 2, Tango Mike Delta. Your name, sir? And do you have a question or comment for the net?
Oh, good evening, net. Just happened to be flipping through when I caught you. So, name on this end is Vinny, Victor India, November Yankee. I'm located in Suffolk County, Long Island, a town called Mastic. Good evening, net. Good evening, net control. Kilo Charlie 2, Tango Mike Delta returning.
Hey, Vinny, very nice. Greetings from Mastic. Our repeater is located in Alpine, New Jersey, and it's up on the Palisades, and it's, you know, just a few hundred feet higher than we are. Most of us, I think, at this point are in New Jersey, but welcome aboard. We have a pretty good sizable audience on in this net, and I'm glad you jumped in. If you do have a question or comment or experience you want to relate, just to stimulate conversation, feel free to post it, and we ask for that. Alrighty, on that note, I'm going to hand it back to see if anybody else has any questions about Rick's, shall we say, errant smoke detector or CO2 alarms. And if not, we'll throw it back to him and then go from there. Anybody else first?
K2ETN Mobile, can you repeat?
Hey, Andy, K2ETN, our trustee. How are you, and do you have a comment for this, net, either on this subject, or will you have one for another one?
Hey, we're lucky we didn't get the last one. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth.
I'm sorry, Andy, you talking about snow, or are you talking about the smoke alarms?
Oh, smoke alarm. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. I had the volume on my receiver turned down quite a bit, and I didn't hear the first couple of words you said. The terrible ice storm we were supposed to get, which we didn't get, it went on up to Massachusetts instead.
They deserve it. Just look at their economy. The bluer the state, the more ice they deserve, with the exception of New Hampshire. But anyway, I'm just being awful today. All right. Very good. So, Rick, back to you for your final comments on this point.
Thank you, Rick. I'm really pretty happy with sitting back and listening. I'm still trying to learn the lingo. I've had a military background, and speaking on the radio is a little bit different, but I do thank everybody's insight. There's definitely a lot of knowledgeable people, a lot more knowledgeable than myself, and I definitely appreciate to sit back and listen, so thank you very much.
All right, real quick, since you're new, what branch of service, how many years, what was your area of expertise, MOS, et cetera?
Started off with about 12 years of service. About three was spent active, deployed down in Cuba. I was a combat medic, a reconnaissance scout or a cavalry scout, and then I was ultimately deployed with an infantry unit for the past, back 2004 through 2005. And, after that, I married my wife and divorced the Army.
Branch of service, were you in Army?
Yes, Army. It was I was in the Army National Guard, been deployed active for about a year and a half.
Okay, I apologize for stepping on somebody. I think I did initially because I had my volume turned down and I didn't hear anybody on. So, if I stepped on you, I am sorry.
Well, Andy, you are the trustee, so it's good. Now, I could tease you and Jim as to which one of you is smarter and which one of you is older and wiser. And I'll defer asking that question. K2ZO's in here as well. All right, now I'm going to move on. But Andy is our trustee, by the way, of this repeater, for everybody's benefit. It's his call sign that floats along the road here, as it were. All right, N2OEL. First of all, Rick, thank you for your service, and I have a son in the Navy, and I understand this stuff very well. I came within a day of joining the Army myself, but it's a whole other story for another day. N2OEL, your question, K2BAR.
Okay, my question today has to do with linear loaded offset centered dipoles. Specifically the ones made by Radio Works. Specifically the 8-meter compact, which claims it can fit this high-performance antenna in about 66 feet. What they're doing is they're taking the ends of the dipole and let it hang about 15 feet down and folding it back. The other thing that these antennas have that are interesting is the center. You feed your coax up, and about 22 feet before the antenna, there's a device that's basically a choke. And then from there, it goes 22 feet of antenna wire that goes to a what they call a tuning unit or something, which basically is a bomb. And it appears that the center section is part of the antenna because they're claiming both vertical and horizontal radiation patterns with some fantastic gain. I don't know where they're going to get it from, but up to 10 dB.
Well, you got me scurrying. Anybody else have a jump on this?
KO2, okay.
Bennett, welcome aboard, and did you have a comment for this?
Yeah, well, I wanted to check in. I thought it was a good chance to do a late check-in, and just ask Noel, isn't that their Carolina Wyndham? I think AA2, and I forgot his call, AC2EE, and a few other people had them. I thought Warren had it also. Back to him.
Well?
Okay, there's two different ones. The Carolina Wyndham is like a classic offset center dipole with a approximately one-third, two-thirds multiple bands on one antenna. However, the compact one, depending on which one you're looking at, managed to fit it in with half the space of a normal dipole. And what it's doing is it's dropping the ends down. And the one I was looking at was the 80-meter one, which actually has... it won't work on 10 meters, so what they do is they put out a conventional 10-meter dipole in almost like an inverted A, and that piece of antenna has an insulated rope that goes to the other end of the long section, which so you got a nice smooth loop hanging underneath. If you're looking at it, just say with the center antenna, the 4-to-1 or 6-to-1 or whatever their unit is in the center. If you look to the right, it goes out X number of feet, which is about two-thirds, say, if you're on the long leg. Then it loops down around, comes back, there's a section of insulator, and then there's the 10-meter antenna, which is a conventional 10-meter dipole. And then of course, in this 22-feet section, which I think is radiated, because how else would they be able to claim both vertical and horizontal radiation patterns? And 2OEM.
K2ZO.
Mr. Zetto?
Okay, K2BAR, K2ZO. What that shortened antenna does, of course, it does not resonate very well on 10 meters because, remember, it's an off-center fed, and it's got to have a low impedance point where it feeds it. So you run into a problem. If you made it a full, 80-meter antenna and fed it 14% off center, you'd get about a 200-ohm impedance on all bands except 15. The 22-foot, if you remember, is resonant on 15 meters. That's the wavelength. And that's the choke down at the bottom there. So that's exactly what happens. Because the antenna is not resonant on 15, they add that by using the feed line and then with a choke. In one of the ones that I built, I just used a 22-foot piece of wire coming off the center where it was up connected, so it was actually in parallel with the long section, and it accomplished the same thing. Back to that.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Noel, did you have any? Did anyone else have any comments for Noel?
Nope, that's it for me. And William.
Oh, that was a good one. That was a very, very good one. All right. Mr. Tony, I think at this point, I think it's time to make that wonderful announcement about what we're not doing on Sunday. K2AMI, K2BAR.
You're not coming to my house for the Super Bowl party, that's for sure. Not having one here. And we won't have a barrel meeting on Sunday because it's the Super Bowl Sunday. But the next Sunday after that, which I think is the 13th, I don't have my calendar handy, but the Sunday after the Super Bowl Sunday is the Barra meeting. And it'll be at the Washington Township Borough Hall in the seniors room up on up off Pascack Road in Washington Township. Meeting starts somewhere around 7:45, but should be there between 7 and 7:30 if you want to mingle with the other guys in the club. I'd like to make another comment, Gordon. That is, I did get a phone call from Tom Gilbert, WA2CAI, and Tom slipped on the ice tonight, this afternoon rather, and he landed on his forward portion. He didn't say his face, but either on his knees or his belly or something of that order. Has no broken bones, but he's now, and he was at the time of the phone call around supper time, he was at the Valley Hospital in the emergency room being checked out. He had no broken bones. He said a little banged up, little bruises. And I think they were just detaining him to check him further. He needs a lot of checking, that guy. And he wanted for me to make sure that you understood that he wouldn't be in the net tonight because he's in Valley Hospital. Those are two comments from K2AMI. Back to net.
You know, if he doesn't want to check in, he doesn't have to go to the hospital in order to avoid the net. Jeez. Thomas. All right. Well, I'm glad that he's not any worse for the wear. He's on the mend, as it were. And, yeah, I'm glad he's also getting checked out just in case. You never know. So that's good. Thank you, Tony. And all kidding aside, really, I'm glad that he's being looked after and everything is good. Alrighty. Anybody have any comments about what Tony announced?
2AMI, another comment?
Sure.
According to Bruce, the program for this month will be a presentation by DNB2F. about what AMSAT is doing and what's up and coming in AMSAT. It's sort of an AMSAT program, so that's the Sunday program for the next fire meeting.
I think it'll be a dynamite program. That's also, by the way, the evening of the Chestnut Ridge dinner. But I think the dinner starts earlier and will be largely over by the time the fire meeting starts, so go figure. I think it's like 4 or 5 o'clock. I have to go back and check, but there are humble sponsors on this repeater. But anyway, that's awesome. So it could be a very interesting evening. Dinner and a show. The NB2F show. The NB2FM side show, even better. Alrighty. Very good. Let's see. Who's next in this fracas? I guess one more time. Anybody have any more comments or questions for Tony? Ready? So, I have a question of sorts. I'm looking at a spectrum scope on my Pro 3 that shows some of the nastiest, gnarliest RFI. And it's got a varying but regular interval, meaning that any given sequence of noise seems to be in a regular interval, but it's not frequency stable, so it shifts around a bit over time. And it sounds like that. And I was wondering if anybody had any thoughts as to what it might be. Any thoughts on that would be very useful to know. And it does seem to be directional. So I'm hunting it down. Or is it directional, actually? Or is my antenna not moving? Why am I a rotator? It's not moving. Wouldn't that be bad? Yeah. Anyway, so I'm just kind of curious if anyone has any prior experience with this. And yes, it does seem to be directional. Anybody have any thoughts about what this might be?
J-E-K, do you have a positive TV?
I do, but it's not, the noise isn't always there even when the TV is, so I don't think that's the issue.
Okay, now I have a plasma TV. Now the TV can be on, but shut off because the cable box is shut off, and that's not like a heck of a racket at 160 meters.
Yeah, the only problem is this is 6 meters. And I think I have a rotator that's frozen. Isn't that bad? My backyard rotator is, no, that's my house rotator. Oh, that's really not bad, not good. All right, so I have something binding in the in the thrust bearing. Oh boy, oh boy. Let's see what that's about. Something definitely binding up there. So I'll have to sort that out. That was actually turning the other day. That's not good. So anyway, so we'll have to sort that out. But my other rotator is seemingly much. Or my other antenna, it doesn't seem to have as much junk, and that's in the backyard, so that could be. It could be something related to the house. I'm thinking it's something related to power lines myself, but we're not quite sure of that yet, so we're going to have to sort that out a bit more. But it looked to me like some sort of AC power, but I wasn't sure. So I'm going to have to go walking around with a THF6 set for sideband and see what it says, see what it does, et cetera, et cetera. Alrighty. I guess our next comment is, our question is, WE2Rs. Charlie?
Okay, thanks, Gordon, WE2R. Should be a simple question. I have a Kenwood 530 transceiver that has been used rarely over the past few years, past decades, I should say. And sometimes I have to wiggle the band switch to make it work properly. So I'm suspecting and hoping that it's dirty contacts on the band switch. Now, what's a good way to clean them? I figured I'd spray them with something. So any recommendations on that score? Back to net, this is WE2R.
Deoxit.
What's that?
That's a commercial product. That's K2ZO. That's a commercial product. It's called Deoxit. That's what you need.
Okay, and where might I get it?
That's a good question, because you used to be able to go into the disco and all those places and buy it. But that's what I put on my 940, who had the same problem. And the contacts would get a little oxidized and stuff. But it's called Deoxit. And you can buy it in a spray. You can buy it in a bottle. Do a search on the Internet. You'll find outfits that sell it. It's great. And I guarantee you that it'll solve that problem on a Kenwood.
Okay, thank you, Jim. If you could just spell it so I can search for it.
Deoxit, I believe that's it. I think there's a dash in between there. But if you do a search on that, you'll find it. And the stuff is great.
Okay, great. That answers my question. Thank you. This is WE2R.
I would agree with Jim on that wholeheartedly. Anybody else have any thoughts? Alrighty. Okay, I have another question for the net, then I want to get on to a really interesting thing that Mr. Jim has in mind. I have a iOmega USB outboard drive, and I've had several others, and they work really great. But I have one that regrettably does not seem to get recognized as a USB device. When you plug it in, nothing happens. And I'm thinking that, you know, something has gone goofy such that the control circuitry is no longer there, and maybe it's not getting proper power supply levels. There is a power supply that's got two voltages that comes into it. So that could be it. But I was wondering if anyone's encountered one of these external USB drives, these big ones. This happens to be a 1T, which is a one terabyte drive, but I think it's got two 500 gig drives built into it. I think that's actually how the physical arrangements are internally. I haven't broken the seal yet, but it's like 3 or 4 years old, so I'm not anticipating any warranty. Before I do crack it open, I'm going to ask iOmega to see if they'll honor it. But I'm wondering if anybody has any thoughts.
USB 2 or USB 1?
Well, on with the show, as they say. K2ZO, you have a comment, a little narrative, a little story to tell. And probably with some interesting implications that are counterintuitive. K2BAR.
You had a question somebody broke in. I think it was Rachel. Go ahead.
Sure, Rachel.
My question to you was, is it USB 1 or USB 2? And are you plugging it into the appropriate USB port on the computer?
It doesn't say whether it's USB 1 or 2, but I'm sure I have USB 2 ports on, and USB 1 ports on various computers, so I haven't seen any problem with that, with it being recognized. It used to be recognized, let's put it that way.
You're saying a 1 terabyte drive, it probably is a USB 2, and I've seen that kind of problem if you plug it into a USB 1 port, because the port isn't fast enough for it to be recognized on the controller inside the external device. The other thing is, do you have it hooked up to an external power supply? You mentioned that it does need power. A lot of times you're not getting the power or sufficient current through the USB port to drive an external hard disk.
Thank you.
Yeah, Rachel, it has an external power supply, and I'm definitely using it. So, yeah, I mean, it lights up. It just, you know, what I'll do is I'll dig around here for a device that's known to be USB 2, and I'll go from there. That's a good thing, because that may be the issue. That may be the issue. We'll have to just double-check.
K2ZO. Go ahead.
Okay, do I have it? This is K2ZO.
Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
Alrighty, I just wanted to make one last comment on the detectors. You have to realize how these detectors work. The smoke detector contains just a few micro curies of americium 131. And, you know, a particle of smoke triggers that thing. There's a high voltage circuit on this. It's basically like a Geiger counter. And if you really look at the circuit, it's just like a big FET that's hanging out there. So anything that's, you know, in the way of RF or whatever is going to trigger it. And, of course, the CO2 detector it's got a similar amplifier, a high impedance amplifier, but what it's got is a chemical reactor with CO causes a reaction, and it uses an optical system, but it is also a high impedance, and that's why they are so easily affected. So there you go.
Very good, Jim. Whoops. Very good, Jim. And why don't you start on the tale of woe for cabling, and I have to run downstairs and check something for my son. He's got some sort of evolving crisis for font selection on his on a paper that has to be turned in the next hour or so, otherwise he's late. K2ZO, K2BAR.
Okay. K2BAR, this is K2ZO. Okay, the other comment that I had was something that Steve, WI2W, had sent to me about a commercial user of LMR 400, and I sent a copy of the file to Tony. That was very interesting. Having made up connectors with LMR 400, LMR 400, of course, is a very nice cable, especially for VHF. And it uses a center conductor that is aluminum with a copper cladding on it. And it also has, of course, an overwrap of aluminum foil, and then on top of that, a braid. Sometimes very difficult to solder to, but I think it's designed more for crimping. The comments that this user had was that it cannot be used for high power in many cases, because what happens is that when you put the connector together and use a sharp razor knife or whatever to strip off the dielectric, it's almost impossible not to nick the center conductor. And what they're saying is that a small nick in the center conductor, which of course is aluminum with a copper cladding, causes a real problem when you run high power, and these things fail. I thought it was very interesting, and sent a copy to file to Gordon to see what he had any ideas about. But I wonder if anybody here has had any problem with LMR 400 in that respect, they're running high power. Okay, and I guess Gordon is still downstairs. Tony, did you get that file? Did you take a look at it?
I did. In fact, I sent it on to my nephew Tom and also to Noel, because Noel had purchased some LMR 400, but I think he bought his with the ends crimped on. But he had heard or read someplace that there is also a problem with noise in the cable. If you do have some nicks of that nature, enough to interfere with the transmission of RF on the outside of that core material, you know, the copper cladding on the aluminum core, that you also get noise on the cable. Again, I can't imagine enough being cut away to cause a disconnect, but apparently that even on a weak signal it could be a problem.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's interesting because they were able to duplicate the problem, and all it required was a small, as you saw in that file I sent you, was a small nick. The copper is just a cladding on the aluminum, and copper and aluminum are very different materials, and I'm not 100% sure how they put that on there. I assume that it's plated on, so it's got to be a thin layer, and just a small nick in it really causes a problem. I guess because of the differential in the resistance between aluminum and copper. Although aluminum is a pretty good conductor, copper is a far better conductor, especially for RF at high frequencies, and especially since the conduction really takes place on the surface. That's why they use the copper on the surface of the aluminum. But having put that stuff together at the OEM building down there in East Rutherford, if you remember, we worked down there. That, I think, was LMR 400, wasn't it?
Well, that was many years ago, Jim. I don't think it was LMR 400. I think it was a low-loss cable, but not LMR 400. I do remember you working on those, but I don't remember the cable designation, so to be an authority on it.
H-O-E-T-N.
Go ahead, Andy.
Just a thought, Jim. Do you suppose that since you do have two levels there, you've got a thermocouple, and you're generating small amounts of current now, when you put the nick in there, you might be shorting those out, and you might be getting some effect on the stage, the whatever amplification stage follows that.
I'm sure that's very, very true, especially if you take a look at the actual electromotive cable. You can see that aluminum and copper have enough of a differential there in voltage that you definitely get something. But basically what this file was, a commercial user of LMR 400 had failures at the connector. And the reason they had failures after they went and analyzed it was that when the technician took the dielectric off, he used a razor knife, and he put a nick in the very thin layer of copper on top of the aluminum, and then after pumping a little bit of high power RF, these things actually failed.
Did they ever analyze it, look at, you know, on a microscopic basis and take a look? Because what I'm suggesting with the thermocouple action, if there's a big difference in potential between the two, that could be the nick that they put in there could be a short circuit. It might possibly cause some ripples in the way a thing is conducting. That's just a thought, but I run into problems with the two different metals making a thermocouple and that affecting a stage further on down the line.
Yeah, I could definitely do that. My handbook's not here. It's downstairs, so I can't go look it up, but I'll look it up later. Meanwhile, what's your email address? Is it etn at ARRL?
No, my name, andrew@werner.net.
Okay, I'll send you a copy of that file, okay?
Fine, I'd like to see that.
Yeah, it was an interesting thing, and for those of you who are VHF contesters of long standing and or been around a while here in North Jersey, you recognize an old familiar call sign in that write-up. Hi. Yeah, Steve Katz, WB2WIK of the K2X rated, or K2XR, or K2OWR contest team. You guys had the most outrageous audio and the most outrageous CQs that you've ever heard in a contest. They had a lot of fun, to say the least. Alrighty. Any other questions for Jim? Alrighty. Well, I'm just wondering if there's anything else we need to cover tonight. Does anybody else have anything else they'd like to bring up or check-ins or anything like that?
This is W2JEK with a question.
Please, Mr. Don, go right ahead.
All right, when you asked a question before about the noise and you were hearing, I have a problem here with the plasma TV. When we shut a thing off, I get about an S9 noise out of this thing on the 160-meter band. I shut the TV off. My cable box and all the other stuff is, I think everything else is off except possibly the cable box. But, so apparently it's the TV set itself. And I'm not sure, would this be radiating, this noise, Rick, coming out of the power lines or the external cable somewhere or other? I'm just wondering how you debug one of these things. I was thinking of one of the things I was doing right before net time was to pull apart one of those old coils from the TV, the focus coil, I think it is, or whatever. I'm trying to going to use that as a split toroid and wrap the power cable through that a few turns and see if I can knock down some of the racket, because they really wax out the 160-meter band for anything but the most powerful signals.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it does. It's probably not very fun either to have to sort through. But, no, as I said before, my issues are with 6 meters, of all things. I have not... I haven't seen it, I don't think, on HF. It's been a while since I checked that, but, nonetheless, it's annoying. And, so we'll have to see. But, measurements and careful location of the origin is probably what's useful. So, if I'm receiving that kind of noise here, I should probably be able to connect my THF-6 to the same antenna here as, the Pro-3 is, get to hear what it sounds like on the THF-6, and then, reattach some other antenna and then start, cuddling up the HT with a, to the plasma TV or whatever else. Try to locate where it's coming from or what its transmission path is.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be trying a few things here with it, see what I can do with this this unit here. See if it is the power cord. There is a ferrite on it, but I don't think it fits very tight. I don't think it's doing much of what I need something more. At any rate, I'll have to play with it. Back to net. Has anybody ever done any of this with any problems with this in the past? No, that's what I was curious about.
2AMI with a general comment.
Yeah, Tony.
Seems that practically all the plasma TVs are out of the sales force now. They don't sell plasma TVs to speak of them anymore. And they were selling LCD TV sets as a the second choice of flat screen TVs, but apparently the newest choice of flat screen TV manufacturers is LED flat screens. Don't know if they're less noisy or what, but I recently purchased an LED flat screen TV, not a very large one, but one that has beautiful definition, and I'm just amazed at how they do it. But that seems to be the progression of flat screens from plasmas to LCDs to now to LEDs. Do you agree?
Changing all the time, that's for sure, Tony.
Yeah, hey, Don, what you need to do is to, do you have an F to PL259 connector?
I might have one. I could probably make something up.
What you do is you take that cable coming in, and you go from an F to the PL259, and hook that up to your amplifier, and put a key down into the cable, and it solved the problem. Of course, your neighbors would be talking about the night the lightning struck, but they'll fix it.
Yeah, wait for a lightning storm to do it, and make sure all your stuff is disconnected when you do.
Even I don't have an amplifier.
Hunter wants to take care of the local problems.
To a QRP guy there, guys.
What does the wise man say? Life's too short for QRP?
I agree.
Unless it means not getting on the air, in which case life's fine in QRP.
Should we also mention the barrel auction coming up on on March the 6th? My calendar keeps getting flipped. March the 6th is the barrel auction.
Go ahead, Tony.
And, unfortunately, the ARRL section division letter identified the barrel auction as a flea market. Now, also, coincidentally, there is another auction down in New Providence on a Friday night, which was identified as a flea market. And both of those statements are incorrect. The one in New Providence and the one here in that's late in February now, I don't know the exact date, and the one up here at the Barra, at the Westwood High School, Westwood Junior and Senior High School in Washington Township, is going to be an auction. And it doesn't start at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, it starts at noontime, or thereabouts. So please make sure that people understand that if you speak to anybody.
Yeah, and you know, while you're at it, the New Providence Amateur Radio Club is doing something really cool. They're sponsoring a 2.5-hour Sunday afternoon FM contest. I don't know if it's this Sunday from 2 to 4.30 or the following Sunday from 2 to 4.30, but if you Google New Providence Amateur Radio Club, I'm sure you'll find their FM contest information. But I did see that. If someone really is interested and can't find it, email me. I'll dig up the email on it. But I thought that'd be kind of fun. 2.5 hours, beating your brains in, making FM contacts. I mean, that's very cool. That's very cool. It's almost worth like going up to a public park, you know, a high spot, beating your brains in for a couple hours because no one's going to throw you out of the park for 2 hours of operation. Go up there at noontime, after church, have a nice little lunch, you know, roll up your sleeves and, you know, pop up one last, get comfortable behind the wheel of your car or in another seat of your car and have a good old time. I think it'd be a lot of fun. Anyway, just thought I'd mention it.
I think the current president of the New Providence Club is also going to be Bill Hudzik. Is Bill Hudzik, and he'll be our new vice president for the area. Is that true?
Oh, our new vice director? Oh, that's interesting. Well, then, that's interesting in itself, showing that the traffic community is alive and well. That's good. Does that mean we'll have a section manager who actually has the listed phone number and will take calls and answer emails?
Let's see. We'll have to see. But he's, if you read the ARL bulletin that came down recently or any of the websites that talk about amateur radio history, news, it mentions Bill Hudzik. Is it UTD? Is K2 UTD? I can't come up with his call exactly. But I know I worked him in the VHF contest.
Guy in mind. Just the guy who's currently the section manager for Northern Jersey?
The ex-section manager, SCM. Yeah, it's called UDT.
There you go. And my comments to him.
And he's taking Joyce's job.
Well, I think it's a better job for him. But he's going to have to learn to be responsive. choice is very responsive, and that's a good thing. But for number two,